Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. So today is a day about perspective. I want us to be thinking about that through all the stuff we're about to cover. Many bad things are happening around the world, as I'm sure you're all very aware of, much of which you won't hear on any of the mainstream media. And actually, few of them at the hands of the people we're told to irrationally hate. In fact, most of them at the hands of the very people they blindly support, the U.S. oligarchy. Very interesting perspective. And most of the claims around the people we're supposed to irrationally hate are based on very clear, easily debunkable lies, based on many of the things we've talked about in the past. So all the stuff we're going to get into today, I want us to be thinking about perspective. And many of you don't, probably in this chat, don't need much help with that, as you're clearly watching this show today, and hopefully coming to your own opinions, maybe even independent of my own. But perspective in regard to what we're being told to think about things around the world and what much of we're about to look at actually shows us. So let's get into the first story of the day, coming from theantimedia.com, entitled, U.S.-backed airstrikes just targeted a bus full of children in Yemen, killing 43. Now, I've seen reports actually since this point that have, some say 50, some say more. Regardless, U.S.-backed airstrikes just targeted a bus full of children in Yemen. Now, of course, that means U.S.-backed Saudi coalition airstrikes, but as we're going to get into more and more, as we've talked about many times in the past, these are very clearly U.S.-backed, incredibly intricately U.S.-backed airstrikes, from picking locations to providing the very bombs they use. So if we're talking complicity here, absolutely U.S.-backed airstrikes targeted a bus full of children in Yemen. So Saudi-led coalition airstrikes today killed dozens of people, including children traveling in a bus in Yemen's Sa'ada province, according to Yemeni medical sources and the International Committee of the Red Cross, the ICRC. The Western-backed alliance fighting the Houthi group in Yemen said the airstrikes targeted missile launchers used to attack the southern Saudi industrial city of Jizan. Apparently, they claim killing a Yemeni civilian there, and it accused the Houthis of using children as human shields, as goes the usual excuse. Now, the point I first want to make here, this is the go-to excuse for Israel, for Saudi Arabia, for U.S.-backed coalitions, to simply say that, well, they were using those children as a way to block us from attacking them, with really no way to ever verify whether that was the case. And everything I can see directly contradicts that claim. As we can see by many other people on the ground, this was simply a school bus driving to school. But the point being is that even if that was the case, which it seems to me was very clearly not, they're basically saying that it's okay that we killed these children because they were using them to block themselves, somehow justifying killing children. This is their way of bending the information, and people say, oh, well, okay, well, it's the Houthis' fault because they were using those children. So just think about the way they're trying to present this, that them killing the children wasn't the problem, but that they put the children in harm's way, which wouldn't, if that was the case, would also lay some of the fault at the Houthis, at the feet of the Houthis, but that's not what happened. And even if it was, there'd still be some fault on their end. So the way they're bending this is important to look at. Now, the U.S.-backed coalition is quoted as saying, quote, today's attack in Sa'ada was a legitimate military operation and was carried out in accordance with international humanitarian law, which, again, even if they were using them as human shields, is not the case. So they're, again, basically lying through their teeth to make this seem like, oh, well, even though these children died, it was a legitimate military operation. The ICRC, again, which was the International Committee of the Red Cross, said one attack hit the bus driving children in Dayan Market in southern Sa'ada, adding hospitals there had received dozens of dead and wounded. The head of a health department in Sa'ada told Reuters that the death rose to 43 with 61 wounded. And again, I've seen reports increasing that, as maybe the wounded have died. Quote, scores killed, even more injured, most under the age of 10. Johannes Brewer, head of the delegation for the ICRC in Yemen, said in a Twitter post, the U.S.-backed coalition has launched thousands of airstrikes in Yemen in which errant strikes that have gone astray, possibly, or maybe they intended to hit these, have killed hundreds of civilians at hospitals, schools, and markets. many of which they cannot claim, oh, well, the Houthis were putting people in our harm's way. This is, again, the ridiculous narrative that this one specifically was because of them. But how do they justify the hospitals and schools and markets? One of which we talked about in the past was a hospital, Doctors Without Borders hospital, that the U.S. was directly involved with striking, that was recently put in. The Saudis were told it was there. They hit it anyway, intentionally. So this is, it's hard to believe that this one just happens to be because of them when this has been their pattern thus far. The Yemen war has killed more than 10,000 people, displaced more than 2 million, and driving the country to the verge of famine, according to the United Nations and many others, which states that upward of 22 million people could currently be at risk of starvation due to the U.S.-backed Saudi actions in general. A horrifying story. Horrifying. This entire story is frustrating in so many different ways to see how this is being played out, and usually, absolutely zero coverage from the mainstream media. Interestingly enough, there has been some coverage of this story today from some mainstream outlets, likely because this is kind of hard to cover up, killing an entire bus full of school-going children. In a completely related story coming from Zero Hedge, entitled, Saudi Coalition Attacks School Bus A Day After State Department Justifies Airstrikes on Yemeni Towns. Interesting. Now, this is where it gets into the mainstream coverage. So, of course, surprisingly, CNN actually covered this strike, although it was apparently, in their opinion, not important enough to earn a headline spot. However, it can be seen as a secondary story just under such breaking CNN news as she has a purple heart and tattoos, and it's a Democrat's new face. And I'll show you a little picture of that. I know you guys hate seeing the mainstream media, but it's interesting to see how they place the importance on these stories. I've highlighted the secondary nature of this entire school bus of children being murdered by U.S.-backed airstrikes. If you click on the World tab, it's not even listed, which is interesting. But of course, this massive story right in the middle of their page, she has a purple heart and tattoos, and it's the Democrats' new face. That's, according to CNN, the biggest story of the day. Interesting how they still pretend to cover it, but clearly they don't want you paying attention to this story. Now, CNN reports, just like we've heard, at least in other stories where they give both sides, they clearly seem to be focusing on the point that the Saudi-led coalition called the airstrike a legitimate military operation. Now, we've noted many times before that Saudi coalition war crimes in Yemen, which have become a weekly, if not almost daily occurrence, has for years been met with mainstream media silence. For example, we recently discussed a study that found that in 1 year, which was last year, MSNBC covered Stormy Daniels 455 times, and the war in Yemen, zero. The entire year of all the war crimes, all the U.S. actions, even without the war crimes, the fact that the U.S. is directly involved in an operation, zero. 450 times for Stormy Daniels. Both the U.S. and U.K. have since 2015 or prior worked closely with Saudi and Emirati forces in their Yemen campaign to, as they claim, to defeat the Shia Houthi forces, which includes staffing intelligence command centers to assist in targeting, as well as providing aerial refueling for coalition jets, one of which likely bombed the school bus full of children. It is also primarily American and British military hardware that's supplying the Saudi military machine in general. Point being, without American and British support, they would not have been able to do what they're doing. The war crimes likely would at least be lessened, despite the fact that their continued claim is that their presence is to lessen the humanitarian crisis. With basic information, it's clear that that is the literal opposite of what their presence is doing. NPR's Steve Inskeep confirmed, while reporting from Yemen earlier this year, the U.S. military, quote, has provided targeting information, equipment, and aircraft refueling to the Saudi air campaign, which has been widely criticized for being indiscriminate and killing civilians in places like hospitals, funerals, and homes. That's coming from the NPR. Even the Wall Street Journal characterized the U.S. role in the new operation as actually deepening, as U.S. intelligence will provide, quote, information to fine-tune the list of targets. Clearly, one of those targets turned out to be a school bus full of children. Now, when an entire school bus of children is being taken out by the U.S.-backed Saudi coalition, which receives continued assistance from U.S. intelligence and military officers, it's clearly becoming increasingly hard to keep up this charade of not being involved or that it's not important. This incident comes a day after the State Department spokesperson said the Saudi coalition's ongoing airstrikes on Yemen were legitimate and justified. Just in case you think that wasn't said, I made sure to have this video for you to take a look at. Now, stomach this video if you can.
Hey, how are you doing?
On Iran, you're basically saying to the country, change your entire foreign policy, and we'll talk to you if you agree to change everything that you...
I would think that we should ask another country to stop attacking other nations and to stop fomenting terror. That's one of the things that the United States government does. We're not alone in asking them to do that. I think that's important to take that stand and not back away from that.
How do you square that with the stance of Saudi Arabia and the UAE and Yemen?
Well, What do you mean by that?
Well, you're just saying that you don't have any problem telling a country how to conduct its foreign policy.
Yep.
But you're siding with Saudi in Yemen.
We have concerns about what the Houthi rebels have been doing for quite some time. That is well documented. They have been terrible and conducted many, many attacks against their own, against the people of Yemen. We've seen what has happened at the port there, the Hudaydah port, and the inability to have a good free flow of goods coming in. And Saudi Arabia certainly has a right to try to take out some of those bad actors. That's something that they have a right to do, and we support that.
So very clearly, it's the same thing we've showed in the past, and I'm probably going to get a strike for even airing that, even though, again, it's a White House press briefing, which should be used for, in fair use, for any news organization to discuss. Every time I get a strike for airing that kind of stuff, because they don't want that stuff being talked about. But just like we've shown in the past, where the gentleman White House briefing was asked how they justify what they're doing with Iran when Saudi is even worse. And he literally pauses and stares at the camera for about 15 seconds and then scrambles to basically say nothing. It's the same kind of thing. They're very clearly saying that, oh, well, these are okay, but these aren't because they're an ally and we don't like the Iranian people, the Iranian government. It's ridiculous. There's no justification. And again, the perspective I'm talking about today in realizing that none of these things are happening in regard to Iran. At least a dramatically lesser degree here. And it's ridiculous to see her stand there and say this. And then the very next day, we see a school bus full of children bombed by the Saudis, a U.S.-backed Saudi coalition. Perspective. All right, let's move on to the next story. Coming from Mint Press News, another excellent one by Whitney Webb entitled, Neocons Concoct Threat of Iranian Hackers to Justify Preemptive Counterattack against Iran. I can't even say that term without getting a smirk. A preemptive counterattack. If that's not political doublespeak, I've never heard it in my life. A preemptive counterattack against Iran. So several reports in both American and Israeli media, as we would expect, have recently been circulating this claim that Iran is increasingly likely to respond to draconian U.S.-imposed sanctions by conducting cyber attacks against the United States. According to this narrative, quote, Iranian hackers have laid the groundwork to carry out extensive cyber attacks on U.S. and European infrastructure and on private companies, prompting the U.S. to consider launching a, quote, preemptive counterattack in response. I mean, what does that even mean, a preemptive counterattack? It makes me crack up every time I hear that phrase. Quoting anonymous U.S. government officials, as usual, think tanks and experts, these mainstream media articles assert that the sanctions the U.S. reimposed on Iran this Tuesday are, quote, likely to push that country to intensify state-sponsored cyber threat activities. Activities that one expert called, quote, the most consequential, costly, and aggressive in the history of the internet, more so than Russia. Again, remember, he's talking about hypothetical things that haven't even happened, but he apparently knows they're going to be more costly, aggressive than anything in the history of the internet. The way that these politicians speak in hyperbole as if it's fact is baffling to me, and that people completely eat it up. Now, first of all, we have to take in the point that we're talking about the fact that due to an action, as many would regard a military action, or shouldn't say military, an aggressive war action, the acts of war as sanctions are, very, very verified and clearly by many people that have respectful opinions would say that sanctions are very much an act of war. Taking an act of war in sanctions against Iran and having them respond to it would in many ways be justifiable. But in this case, they're claiming these are coming forward without any real evidence to back it up. And then going on to say even more so than Russia, as if those claims, again, have even been verified themselves. This is a phantom threat created on some kind of an illusion. Like, the whole thing is centered around some completely hypothetical concept. It blows me away that these things are even given credence by anybody, but obviously the mainstream media's job is to promote these things. Now, as Whitney Webb rightly points out, upon closer examination, it's clear that these warnings of an imminent Iranian cyber attack are dubious at best, aimed at ending the U.S. isolation on the issue through dishonest intelligence, while also justifying a U.S. preemptive counterattack on Iran's infrastructure in a bid to further destabilize the nation, in service to the Trump administration's overall goal, long-sought verifiable goal of regime change in Iran. Most of these articles, in introducing the threat posed by Iranian state-sponsored hackers, state that they originated with, quote, cybersecurity and intelligence experts, many of which are anonymous, of course. However, just sentences later within these articles, when these experts are quoted, they specifically state that no evidence of such a threat even exists. Of course, they're hoping people will read headlines and move on, which is what most people do today, within their own information, directly contradicts that they even have evidence to state that this is a fact. For instance, an Associated Press story, which begins with the statement that, quote, the United States is bracing for cyber attacks Iran could launch in retaliation for the reimposition of sanctions, quotes Priscilla Moriachi, director of strategic threat development at Recorded Future, a cyber threat intelligence company, as saying the following just two sentences later. While we have no specific threats, we have seen an increase in chatter related to Iranian threat activity over the past several weeks, directly contradicting the statement they made prior to that. In addition, Moriachi is hardly unbiased, as her company Recorded Future counts among its clients several U.S. weapons manufacturers like Raytheon, and also regularly collaborates with the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, as well as technology companies that double as U.S. military contractors, such as Google and Palantir. Notably, Recorded Future was initially funded by both Google and InQtel, the venture capitalist arm of the Central Intelligence Agency. Big surprise. In a statement given to NBC by the spokeswoman for Iran's UN delegation, she stated that, quote, Iran has no intention of engaging in any kind of cyber war with the U.S., which you could take that for what you will, but they're saying that's not the case. Adding, from our perspective, it's more likely the U.S. wants the supposed suspicion of an attack as rationalization for a cyber attack against Iran. She went on to call the U.S., quote, the most belligerent cyber attacker of any nation in the world, repeatedly attacking military and civilian targets across the world, including Iran. And she's verifiably correct in that. So regardless, even if this is some grand manipulation by Iran, and they are planning that, her statement is 100% accurate. And so all we can do is take the facts we have and come to our own independent conclusion. And based on what we know, this seems like most likely the case. This is some grand deception by the U.S. to create the context to carry out an attack on Iran. And in any case, the U.S. is apparently already preparing more sanctions, they're claiming, based on this phantom cyber attack chatter, seemingly on its own creation. Even if that was the entire plan, it seems to be working for them, creating this entire narrative to continue with more sanctions based on basically nothing. No surprise there, as Iranian sanctions are so frequent these days that it doesn't seem like any issue or even become newsworthy anymore. And we have to remember that this article specifically, I highly recommend you dive into. There's a lot of information, as Whitney Webb always delivers. She makes the point clearly that all of the experts listed in this, the supposed experts that they do list, are basically entirely every way linked to the United States and defense contractors, many of which are directly linked to John Bolton himself. Big surprise. So always skepticism in regard to both sides of the story, but always the information we have in front of us is the only way we have to come to our conclusions, and it seems pretty clear to me that this is yet another deception they're trying to continue to foment the unrest amongst the American people in regard to Iran. Now keep your eyes open with this story. Moving on to the next one, coming from antiwar.com. An interesting development, a story we've been following for a long time, entitled U.S. Sanctions Russia Over Claimed UK Nerve Attack, or New Nerve Agent Attack. Seems unexpected in a lot of ways from what we just recently saw taking place in Helsinki. So this is an interesting development, but it's not entirely surprising based on what we've seen with specifically not Trump, but his administration, which clearly seems to be calling the shots. So months after Britain alleged that the Russian government carried out nerve agent attacks on Salisbury, the Trump administration has announced a new round of sanctions against Russia, aimed to punish them for the incident. The Novichok poisoning incident was claimed by Britain's government, but contested by Russia, of course. Even if it did happen, in react, they said it would, of course, Russia would contest it anyway. But there was never conclusive evidence to support the claims that Russia was behind it whatsoever. At the time, the U.S. expelled a number of Russian diplomats, that too over unverified allegations of Russian poisonings. And as far as I'm concerned, I've seen mountains of evidence that suggest that it was a complete fabrication, or at least a false flag carried out by the U.K. government. I've seen no evidence whatsoever to suggest that Russia was in any way connected to that. And there's been a lot of even mainstream journalists that have completely debunked this story. But now we're seeing this happen. Britain was quite happy with the expulsion back in March, and unsurprisingly was quick to endorse the new U.S. sanctions as a strong international response to the use of chemical weapons on the streets of Salisbury. Yet the U.S. has never answered the question of how it decided to accept Britain's allegations without evidence at all. It's also not clear why the U.S. decided to wait 5 months, apparently, after the expulsions to impose these sanctions. Still, sanctioning Russia happens so often, as well as Iran, that these kind of just don't even need an excuse anymore. But this is an entirely interesting development, after the recent Novichok incident that seemed to be kind of another way to get this back in people's minds. Was that meant to reinforce this action, and it failed to some degree? That's a question we should be asking ourselves, because it seemed like they were trying in every way to connect it to that past story. Many probably aren't even aware that there was another Novichok incident, that the media did everything they could to connect back to Russia. And again, after the Helsinki meeting, this is an interesting development. It seemed like at least Trump was trying to do this, but trying to create some kind of a positive step forward. But clearly that's not what's happening. This directly contradicts that. And as Russia stated themselves, quote, such measures are absolutely unfriendly and can hardly be associated with the constructive, difficult but constructive atmosphere at the last meeting of the two presidents. So in my mind, this seems very clear that the administration behind him seems to be ultimately calling the shots, whether he is conceding to what is their larger knowledge in foreign policy or just simply allowing them to make these decisions. His front in regard to the Helsinki meeting seems completely fabricated in regard to the steps they're currently taking, especially 5 months later, which Trump was very aware of going into this meeting. So as if they didn't know they were going to be doing this, something seems off about this whole thing, clearly based on evidence that has been debunked as far as I can tell. Interesting development. Again, we'll have to keep track of this, but it does fall in line with precisely what the globalist neocon neoliberal agenda that's about making Russia the bad guy. And in regard to many other countries as well. But this falls right in line with what they've been trying to accomplish for a very long time. Moving on to the next story coming from ZeroHedge.com. And another one that's really damning in regard to the way they try to paint this country as a U.S. ally. Entitled, Saudi Arabia Crucifies Man in Mecca While Decrying Canada's Human Rights. Crucifies a man. Did you even know that was still happening? Indeed it is, on a regular basis in Saudi Arabia. So Saudi Arabia has executed a man by crucifixion inside Mecca, considered Islam's holiest city, according to Bloomberg. It was carried out Wednesday during the same week a Saudi spat with Canada over human rights criticisms has dramatically escalated into a full-blown diplomatic and economic war. And interestingly enough, on a side note, Whitney Webb also wrote a recent article discussing the possibility that might be much more than human rights that's at play here. Maybe a Saudi play at an oil manipulation as far as economics with Canada. It's interesting. I'll include that in the show notes as well. But the point she makes is there may be more going on here under the scenes, and the human rights discussion is kind of a cover to create this rift between Saudi Arabia and Canada. Seems very likely. Ironically, this crucifixion was carried out a day after Saudi-owned media began calling out Canada's human rights record through a series of bizarre videos aired on State's channel in response to Canada's own initial criticism of the kingdom's detention of activists, the Badawi family, one of them is a Canadian citizen, for simply protesting human rights activism in Saudi Arabia, which I guess is a crime. Amnesty International provides the following description of this gruesome practice. And this is a horrifying thing to prepare yourself. So crucifixions take place after the beheading. The body, with the separated head sewn back on, is hung from or against a pole in public to act as a deterrent. The pole is sometimes shaped in the form of a cross, hence the term crucifixion. So think about that. This is a U.S. ally. These actions are supported by the U.S. government in general. I mean, clearly. This stuff happens on a regular basis. And here's some stats to back that up. Saudi Arabia is among the world's top executioner and beheaded over 48 people within only the first 4 months of 2018, according to Human Rights Watch. In 2015, the kingdom reached a two-decade high with over 157, and the following year executed 47 on a single day. 47 people executed in a single day, including a prominent Shia cleric for leading anti-government protests. And since 2015, the number of beheadings and executions have remained well over 100 every year. It appears 2018 will be no different. Perspective. Considering what this is, what this U.S. ally is doing, even in regard to this person we're talking about, the person that was crucified during this whole thing, the recent one, was a criminal and apparently murdered somebody. But the reality here is about what they're willing to do and the way that they're talking about this. Beheading somebody, sewing the head back on, and hanging it in the town square. Is this the Middle Ages? These are the people that the U.S. government currently supports. You don't see that happening in Iran. So consider that. Moving on to the next story, and in the same light, talking about U.S. allies and the horrendous things taking place. The next article coming from MiddleEastEye.com entitled Israeli Airstrikes Kill Palestinians in Gaza as Tensions Rise. Now, this was a developing story, and this is the first installation of this story that takes us into today. So Israeli airstrikes on Gaza at this point killed one Palestinian and wounded eight on Wednesday. The Palestinian Health Ministry in the besieged enclave has released this information. The Israeli army said Hamas launched about 70 rockets into Israel, most of which were intercepted, as they claim, by the Iron Dome aerial defense system or fell in open areas. Three Israelis sustained minor injuries from the attacks. But by Israelis' own admission, there has been no deaths of Israeli people. And it's important to understand that this is important to grasp the concept here, that Gaza and Hamas are indeed carrying out their own strikes against Israel. And whether you think that's justified or not, we have to understand the larger concept here, the context around this entire thing. Palestine is an illegally occupied area where people are daily confronted with gross human rights violations, and people are being murdered on a regular basis for no reason whatsoever, with no legal justification and no legal avenues to object. So they're standing against what they see as an occupying force. So consider that as they strike back. That being said, of course, Hamas and Gaza are continuing to strike back as well. But this is where the story continues. The rockets followed confrontations between Hamas fighters and Israeli forces earlier on Wednesday, in which Israel said it had shelled a Hamas post after Palestinian gunfire struck an engineering vehicle along the Gaza fence. So that's how this tends to work. A seemingly erroneous strike, a bolt that hit their engineering vehicle, and they turn around and carry out strikes that murder Palestinians as a way to say, you can't even fire at us. You can't even defend yourselves. The health ministry identified Wednesday's victim as a 30-year-old Ali Al-Gandour. On Tuesday, two Palestinians were killed in an Israeli raid on Gaza. However, Palestinians and Israelis are now in advanced stages. At this point, they were in advanced stages of indirect negotiations to defuse tensions, according to Hamas official. Every single time we see the effort from Hamas, specifically, that they claim to be a terrorist organization by the Israelis and the U.S., Hamas officials in Gaza in general trying to defuse the situation. And then, of course, hours later, following the development of this story, from the same outlet, Israeli warplanes strike Gaza City Cultural Center. Really seems like a military place to strike, doesn't it? Seems like a lot of civilians might be there. Maybe that was the entire point. At least 18 Palestinians were injured by an Israeli airstrike on the cultural center in Gaza City on Thursday evening, following their efforts to de-escalate the situation. As we've seen in the past, same with Saudi Arabia in Yemen, where they tried to say, look, let's stop what's happening, and they strike while they're trying to de-escalate. The Palestinian Health Ministry has released this information as well. As overnight fighting that killed three Palestinians resumed after a period of relative calm. Clearly, trying to make that happen. According to eyewitnesses, at least 12 successive explosions were heard as Israeli warplanes flew over Gaza City, hitting the popular cultural center with a lot of civilians. Clearly, that being the case. And as more information continued to come out about this story, this one coming entitled Israel Airstrike Kills Three, Including Pregnant Mother, Toddler in Gaza. Just showing you the depths to which this continues to escalate, as no Israelis were killed, as they're claiming they were fighting back in general. But regardless, we have to see the real context in this entire situation. And this is indeed a sad story. So three Palestinians were killed and many others severely injured pre-dawn today as a result of the Israeli airstrikes carried out over the besieged Gaza Strip. The spokesperson for the Palestinian Ministry of Health Ministry in Gaza, it's Ashraf Al-Qadra, confirmed that among those killed was a 23-year-old pregnant mother along with her 18-month-year-old toddler. The ministry identified the mother as Inas Muhammad Kamash and her daughter as Bayan Kamash. Now, these are innocent people simply caught up in this battle. But we have to understand what's happening here in the larger context, that these people are being occupied by an illegal occupying force. And the way that they always frame this, whether we're talking about Yemen or we're talking about any of these places where the U.S.-backed forces are killing people. Imagine somebody broke into your house, telling you that your house is now their house, and you turn around and shoot them, and you're called the bad guy. Think about that. That's essentially what we're seeing play out here on a much larger scale. And people argue the opposite. But as always, all we have is the information in front of us, and based on the facts that we can see, an unbiased perspective, an objective look at all of this, very clearly we can see that that is the case. Now, look at all the death and destruction we covered today. So much deceit, so many civilian deaths, humanitarian disasters, outright torture, and always followed by political doublespeak and U.S. justification, and all carried out by the closest of U.S. allies. But guess who's not a part of this? Guess who's not been killing innocent civilians and crucifying and beheading its populace, or bombing school buses full of children, or murdering a pregnant woman and her young child, or creating lies and deceptions to try and justify it all? Guess who's not doing any of that? Iran. Now, as always, I'm not saying its government, its democratically elected government, is the best there is, or that it has unanimous support of its people, or that it's without any of its own problems. I'm simply saying, let's have some perspective in regard to the onslaught of U.S.-Israeli propaganda surrounding Iran specifically, while Saudi Arabia and Israel continue to intentionally escalate two of the worst humanitarian crises in the world, possibly in history, with malice. And the U.S. continues to justify the horrors or outright obfuscate that truth. So take that all in today. I'll leave you with that information. For those that want to continue the discussion, I'll be starting my TLAV research and review in a few minutes, so just stay tuned on this very page. Make sure you check out all of the links in the show notes, the independent sources in the show notes below, or check out thelastamericanvagabond.com or WKUP.live. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.